Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Fresh custody hearings began this week for the 460-plus children seized last month from the Yearning for Zion Ranch in El Dorado, West Texas. The state initially claimed more than half the polygamous sex underage girls were either pregnant or mothers. But confusing family ties mean more than 100 of the children of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or FLDS, have still not been matched with their parents. This hour, On Point, religion, child safety, and the epic Texas raid on the Yearning for Zion Ranch. Hearings this week, people speaking out. In an appearance on the CBS Early Show earlier this week, an FLDS mother of six children, identified by only her first name, Dora May, said that taking the children from her community is wrong.
Every American mother should be standing in line saying, "This is wrong. This is America. I have the right to hold my baby and rock her. I have the right to love my children." Let every mother realize that this is not just a thrust against me. This is not just a thrust against us because we're different. You could be next. This is a thrust against a whole American way of life.
A mother's plea there. FLDS elder and church spokesman William Jessup spoke to reporters on Monday before the courthouse in San Angelo, Texas.
If they can openly admit that they can take away the Book of Mormon from us today, it'll be the Bible tomorrow.
But Texas says it's standing up for child safety, and it's not standing down on that front. Joining me first today from Dallas is NPR correspondent Wade Goodwin, who's been following the whole story. Wade, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
How is Texas responding to this, if it's possible to say it? But where does public sentiment stand in the big state where this is all unfolding, Wade?
It's not possible to say, because the public sentiment is all over the place in Texas, just like it is everywhere else. There are those on the left, civil rights advocates, who say the state went in, you know, way too aggressively and should not have taken all the children. There are other advocates on the left who say, hooray for Child Protective Services for going in, at least someone standing up for the women and children after all this time. You know, Utah and Arizona should have done it long ago. And you will get the exact same opinions on the right. You'll get Ron Paul supporters who think, you know, this was an abomination by the state. And you'll get conservatives who say, way to go, way to stand up for the women and children. And we're not going to allow bigamy and child abuse, especially child abuse, to go on in Texas. So the court of public opinion is all over the map, and people themselves will have contradictory opinions about this, or complex opinions about this.
Is it the buzz of Texas? Is everyone talking about it there?
Everyone's interested. I don't know that everyone's talking about it, but everyone is interested in it. And when they do talk about it, they talk deeply and in interesting ways, because I think this is an issue which causes a lot of reflection and a lot of thinking about, you know, who do we want to protect and which side deserves more protection. It's not simple and cut and dried.
Before the big, big raid in April, Wade, was the Yearning for Zion Ranch on the public screen in Texas? Was this polygamous sect just tucked away out of sight, out of mind, or was it already an issue?
Yeah, I mean, people in Texas, I think, generally knew about it, but I think it was it was somewhat out of sight, out of mind. I mean, the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints locate their communities in very remote rural areas for a reason. They are trying to escape the long arm of American justice, and they've been doing that since the beginning of their groups. So they're far away in West Texas. El Dorado is a long way out there, and, you know, the sheriff there was, I think, content to live and let live as long as the group didn't cause any trouble, which they did not.
Can you paint a picture for us of the ranch in El Dorado, the terrain there, the sort of physical plant of the ranch? This is a lot of children. It's a significant population of people who had been living there.
Yes, it's, you know, it's kind of Texas the way you think about it in the movies. It's there's not very many trees. You don't get water. It's the desert. It's rolling hills. It's mesquite brush. And what's interesting about this is these people took a piece of land which was worth not very much, and in a very short period of time have turned it into a piece of property that's worth tens of millions of dollars. And so they've done it by a lot of hard work. They grow all their food out there. They have built this gleaming, beautiful temple in the desert, which rises out of the desert like a ghost. And the houses that they've built for themselves, they look like something you'd see, you know, in the Caribbean at a Four Seasons resort. Huge buildings, massive living rooms, dozens of bedrooms and bathrooms, huge kitchens. It's really quite something.
What are their finances like? How do they support themselves? Are they ranching, raising cattle, or something else? Did they strike oil?
No, they're in construction. Mm-hmm. They've been in the construction business for decades, and they've had government contracts. They had a company called Western Precision that did a lot of made parts for blood pumps, all kinds of things. But these are people who are very skilled laborers, good with their hands, and they work hard. And when you have a communal community, the wealth can build up fast.
It's the sect's polygamy and the way that's intersected with child rearing, which has caused so much controversy. We should remind us of the history there. It's a long time since this sect broke with the mainstream Mormon church, but how did that unfold?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not sure you could directly trace the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints directly to the break by fundamentalists in the 1890s. You probably could trace these are the descendants of some of the people who broke. But when the Mormon Church renounced polygamy, this was a central tenet by both Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. Mm. Both of them had dozens of wives, and so. When they renounced it, in large part because they wanted to join the Union, and they were actually being threatened by the U.S. Army and the president, then those who believed in the original tenets of Mormonism broke and become fundamentalist Mormons. And this group evolved out of the descendant, or became the descendants of those who broke. And so these are people who have practiced polygamy. You know, this is the older tradition. The issue of young brides, though, I think there was young brides. I think Brigham Young took a bride who was in her young teens. But this is something that has flourished more under Warren Jeffs and his father Rulon Jeffs than it had been in the prophets who governed the group before.
Warren Jeffs, the FLDS leader, convicted, last year, and the leader of a community that stretches well beyond Texas.
Right. They've got settlements all over the United States in four or five different places and in Canada. But they've broken away. They splinter off from one another. And so there was even a group inside of Hilldale in Colorado City. It was called the Second Ward, who broke away from Warren Jeffs when the Jeffs took over. The group used to be governed by a council of seven, and it was only when Warren Jeffs' father became the prophet that he eliminated that practice and became one man, one rule. And a lot of FLDS split at that point and said, "We're out of here." And they live in a different part of the Hilldale, Colorado City community. So, and different part, the group in Canada has split away from Warren Jeffs.
Of course, Warren Jeffs convicted last year, I guess, on this rape charge.
Yes, two counts of conspiracy, accessory to rape. Mm-hmm. And
for arranging a marriage between an underage girl and an older man in Utah.
Her first cousin, she was 14 and he was 19, and she did not want to get married, fought the marriage all the way, I refused to say I do at first at the marriage. It was just, you know, had to be prodded. Warren just had to bring the girl's mother over in the middle of the wedding ceremony to hold her hand to kind of force her to say yes. And she continued to protest. She didn't want to be married to this man. You know, she did not want to have sexual relations with this man. You know, she repeatedly came back to Warren Jeffs and begged him to relieve her of this. And his refusal to do so were the grounds for his conviction.
One of his several wives, 34-year-old Monica Sue Jeffs, was in court in Texas this week in San Angelo, along with many other wives of the FLDS yearning for Zion, for these custody hearings around their children. How far flung are the 460-some children of the ranch now, Wade?
As big as Texas. You know, some of these mothers have kids separated by hundreds of miles, and it would be almost impossible in a single week to go from where some of these mothers have children, because some of them have six children or seven children, and they can be spread out all over the place. So that is one major complaint, and I think that's a complaint that the state is sensitive to and is going to try to rectify in the coming months, is to try to reorganize it so that some of these families, some of these children are together, and make it easier on the mothers and fathers to have visitation.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the controversial Texas roundup of 460-plus children of fundamentalist polygamists, the FLDS group in the Yearning for Zion Ranch in West Texas, looking at where that case stands now, the big raid, and the reality of its aftermath. Here's Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott on Fox News last month talking about the case against FLDS members here.
Some of the evidence has already been submitted in court, contains lists that were obtained from the compound indicating that there were young brides to older men.
How young?
That would be in violation of Texas law. And the second thing is that there were young girls who were either pregnant or who already had given birth.
Right.
And that would be a violation of Texas sexual assault laws against children.
There, a sense of how the law is coming at this. And this week, fresh custody hearings around those children and their fate, the fate of the whole compound, really. We've been joined by NPR's terrific Dallas-based correspondent Wade Goodwin, who's been keeping us all informed through NPR's reports ever since the first raid. We're joined now by a couple more guests with different perspectives on what's going on with the Texas case. Laura Shockley joins us from Dallas, Texas. She's an attorney representing several of the children and families taken from the polygamous sect in West Texas and now in state custody. Laura Shockley, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And with us from Winona, Minnesota, is Marcy Hamilton, professor of law at Yeshiva University's Cardoza School of Law in New York, an expert on church and state issues, author of Justice Denied, What Americans Can Do to Protect the Children. Marcy Hamilton, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Laura Shockley, it's an enormous number of children. The state was up against, I guess, quite a challenge, though, when it got this call saying, you know, I'm a 16-year-old girl, I'm being abused here, help me. In they moved. What do you make of how the state of Texas has moved in this case, Laura?
I think they moved in a wide and overreaching method, is what I think. After I sat through the 14-day hearings, and now yesterday when I spent a day in San Angelo at some hearings on the disputed mothers.
The disputed mothers, meaning?
There are a group of quote-unquote children who many of them have been determined or are in the process of being determined to be adults that the state deemed for whatever reason or for a variety of reasons that they were minors. And they kept them in state custody for the last month since the raid. And now are determining that several of them, including several of them who were pregnant, are in fact over the age of 18. Some of whom are significantly over the age of 18.
Wade Goodwin, the state did say very loud and clear, and it was reported everywhere, that 31 of 53 girls were between ages of 14 and 17 were pregnant or had children or both. Now, as Laura says, there's a dispute about that. Is it clear where that final number may stand and why the confusion, Wade?
Well, it's not clear where the number may stand. You know, we have always used the word alleged when referring to the state's claims as to how many children it had who were victims of sexual abuse. And there has been resistance by members of the FLDS, mothers, fathers, and children, to the process of the state trying to identify who they are, which children belong to which parents, how old the children are, and so part of what is shaking out here is the state kind of sorting out for itself over time what the truth is about the facts are in this case. But I don't think that the members of the FLDS are completely blameless in this confusion.
A kind of deliberate obfuscation there. Marcy Hamilton, Laura Shockley is representing some of these children and says the state has acted in a way too broad, too wide, too sweeping. On the other hand, it was a great big compound with a lot of people. Do you think Texas has gone too far, not far enough? How do you see it?
I don't think Texas has gone too far at all. Once they went into the compound and saw the girls that were pregnant, they came up with the records that they found showing both the polygamy and the underage girls being married to much older men. They really had no choice. And the problem for this group is not religious. They have the right to believe anything they want. The problem is the growing record of permitting much older men to have sex with girls. And even if you take three or four of those girls out of the equation, you still have way too many statutory rapes and sexual assaults to justify returning children to the group as a whole.
Laura Shockley, Judge Gossett, Thomas Gossett in San Angelo this week, saying to one of the mothers there, you know, look, your right to your religious belief ends when it violates the law, and very unapologetic about that. What about it? There's the law. There's the circumstance of the compound. Is there not a problem that the state should be paying attention to here?
There are some cases that the state should be paying attention to, certainly. And I haven't denied that they should be paying attention to those cases from the beginning.
Mm.
The problem is the method that they have done it, and that method is coming out by the day more and more as being egregious. And the second problem, and more importantly, is that they have decided that this is one household of people because that's what the statute calls for, is them to be able to remove children who are a party to one household. This is not one household. There was no evidence that it is one household at the 14-day hearing. They've produced no evidence that they are one household. In fact, they've produced contrary evidence that, in fact, there are 19 separate residences on that ranch, and they did nothing to prevent the mass removal of all of these children, the cost that it's costing the state to house them, and the depletion of resources in the entire state of Texas to prevent that, and they are mandated to do so by the state. This is not, they don't just get to go in somewhere and do a fishing expedition, and that's exactly what they've done.
Ms. Shockley, can you describe where and how those 460-some children are being sheltered, fed, cared for right now?
Sure. They are all at various group homes or emergency shelters throughout the state of Texas.
And is it the foster care system?
It's akin to the foster care system. It is paid for by the state. They are placed at facilities that contract with Child Protective Services to provide care for children that are in their care.
Wade Goodwin, how long is the state saying the children may be in this care away from their family?
Up to a year. They have a year. The law allows them a year to try to sort this out. So, you know, I think it's taken a while, but, you know, the FLDS families are starting to sink in that this situation is not going to get resolved in the kind of short time frame that they would like it to get resolved in.
And what about the one household argument that the state made, Laura Shockley says, to go in and take this move?
It depends on how you define household, isn't it? I mean, it seems like a stretch, I think CPS is defining the household as a culture. I think that's probably the phrase they would use. I mean, whether a judge will agree that all these separate families are parts of one household, I mean, that remains to be seen.
And Marcy Hamilton, I mean, you're concerned about the child's welfare here, but yet a raid, the government swooping in, potentially a year away from family, however that's defined, that has to be traumatic in and of itself. How do you weigh the traumas here?
Well, childhood sexual abuse is traumatic to any child that it is a victim of it, whether they are a part of the FLDS or anywhere else. And so many of these children are already traumatized, whether they are girls that were sexually assaulted or they are boys being groomed to be in the position of sexual assaulters later. The notion that the state is supposed to go in and cherry pick abused children, it would be one argument if there were one girl who was statutorily raped. You have many, many more, and the evidence is incontrovertible that they had children at very young ages. This is about child protection. It's really not about the state of Texas, which has its own issues with respect to how to deal with this problem. But the foremost issue here is how do we rescue children in circumstances where they are going to be part of what amounts to a sex cult? This has just already been established by the facts. My question for anyone representing the mothers or the fathers is just how many statutory rapes do there have to be when you agree that all children from this same community could be removed? Seems to me we've passed that threshold long ago.
Wade, how does the FLDS community respond when they get characterized, and they do in this way, as Marcy Hamilton says, calling this a sex cult? We see the women with sort of Victorian-era dress and mannerisms. They look quaint on the superficially. They don't, you know, it's not sequin stockings and I don't know what. It doesn't look like a sex cult, but how do they respond when that charge, that framing is put on them?
They would say that's ridiculous because sex doesn't matter to them hardly at all. The teachings are that sex is to be for procreation only. And, you know, I think a lot of the women would say that sex doesn't play a very large role in their lives or in the community. But the question is not how much sex do you have, but is all the sex going on appropriate and consensual and legal, which I think is the issue for Marcy Hamilton.
Marcy, what do you say to their denial that the sex is scarcely important to our community?
Well, they have every right to choose how often they have sex, and the sex between the consenting adults is certainly not an issue. It's the number of children that have been subjected to sexual abuse, and girls, and even some of the boys. And so the notion that the state has to turn a blind eye to that and start going house by house to figure out which of the children, one, haven't been abused, which will not be abused in the near future, and which will never be abused. The state shouldn't have to do that in bringing them to safety. Now, the complaints about the time delay are the complaints you would hear from anybody. What people keep forgetting is that children are taken from unsafe homes every day. And the process that this group is receiving is not differentiable from any other group. The only difference is it's a lot of them at a time, and they have access to things like public relations so that they can argue that you could be the next American mother who is subjected to this. That's not what happens to normal mothers who have been in abusive homes and their children have been taken away from them. They don't have that kind of access to the media.
Let's begin to hear from our listeners. A lot of them want to join this conversation. Let me turn to Mireille in Hollis, New Hampshire. Hi, Mireille. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, my point was that you just made my point a bit earlier, but I think it's a terrible mistake separating those young children from their mothers. And I think the consequences will be much more deeper than the situation they're in. I mean, I'm not discussing the sexual abuse, which the Texas has to make a case for it. But you know, that just rule that, you know, we separate the kids from the mothers at the time when they need the stability, they need the love to thrust them into a world that don't know anything about. I mean, that has to be very consequential in the later years.
And that's obviously hard, but how do you stack that up against the potential or the reality of what the law defines as sexual abuse, Mireille?
Then they should do their work. Going there, why should they take the kids from the family? They should go in there, do their work, and go through case by case. But they're taking all these children, like throwing a big fish net, and then their young children being separated from their moms and thrust into foster care, people that don't know, and being completely traumatized by that. And this trauma stays. I mean, when you have kids being abducted from their parents, you know, so in the news, it's horrible, because we know it's horrible.
Mireille, thanks for that. Let me get another call here from Chesapeake, Virginia, and Susan. Susan, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you.
Yeah.
I agree with Marcy. This has been going on for over 100 years. They're out of sight, out of mind. Nobody wants to deal with it. And these children, every child that's born on these places, it's child abuse because they are programmed. They are brainwashed. And then they grow up and they start hitting puberty, and then they start with the sexual abuse, farming them out to these older men. Nobody is talking really about all the boys that have been either sexually abused, kicked off because they're hitting puberty, and they are going to be competing for a few certain older men to get these women. It is sexual abuse. It's rape. It's child abuse and polygamy. It's all against the law, and this should have been done a long time ago, and I applaud Texas.
Susan, thanks for your call. Laura Shockley, do you think our first caller there said there's too big a net to cast? Here you said pretty much the same thing, but was there realistically another way to do it in this uncooperative community that doesn't want to help the law figure out who's part of what direct lineage and who's even married to whom?
Well, it's interesting that all of the folks are commenting on the uncooperative nature of this when I have been at the 14-day hearing and at the hearings and in fact represent six of the children. Many of these people are not uncooperative any more than the person that I sat next to in court this morning in Dallas County whose children were just removed and who hid their children for over a week were uncooperative. The fact of the matter is that the state has come in and deemed some of these women minors, and now are relying upon information that were presented to them at the very beginning of the case. They've now determined, oh, yeah, you're probably right. You are over the age of 18. There is no evidence that there's mass sexual abuse. There is evidence, just like there is in any community, that some teenagers have been pregnant. That number is in dispute now because the state, again, took these children that aren't children into custody, and we don't know the exact number of how many people in that community are actually under the age of 18 or how many and pregnant, and how many of those disputed minors are in fact adults. And until that time comes, which is coming rapidly in the next 2 weeks, this idea that there's this mass amount of mothers under the age of 18 who are pregnant is ridiculous.
When we come back, we'll talk with the Attorney General of the State of Utah, Mark Shurtleff, Laura Shockley, representing some of the kids there in Texas, joining us from Dallas. Thanks very much for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the controversial Texas roundup of 460-plus children from a fundamentalist sect, FLDS, at the Yearning for Zion Ranch in West Texas polygamous sect there, looking at where that case stands now, the big raid and the reality of its aftermath. That is a lot of children not easy to deal with. Senator Harry Reid of Nevada appeared on a Utah radio show on KUER at the end of April to condemn the FLDS and applaud the action the state of Texas had taken against the sect. Let's listen.
I am a cheerleader for what has gone on in Texas. I think that Texas is doing what Utah and Arizona should have done decades ago. I think it is wrong what is going on. There's abuse of children. As you know, in the Texas raid, they have many teenagers, 12, 13-year-olds, that are pregnant. Mm. It is wrong. And to have what goes on in Arizona and in Utah go on year after year after year, and people turn a blind eye to it, it is, I think, a travesty. And I am embarrassed for these two states.
U.S. Senator Harry Reid right there, very strong for Texas and critical of some of his neighbors. We've been joined by Wade Goodwin, NPR's Dallas correspondent, who's been covering this story, and by Marcy Hamilton, joining us from Winona, Minnesota today, law professor at Yeshiva University's Cardoza School of Law in New York. We're joined right now from Salt Lake City, Utah, by Utah's Attorney General, Mark Schertleff. Attorney General Schertleff, thanks very much for being here.
My pleasure. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm well. You've been kind of muted in your, I'm not sure whether to call you a critic or a supporter of what Texas done. You've described it as kind of a mixed bag. How do you see it?
Well, first of all, since you replayed Senator Harry Reid's comments, you do know that he has since called to apologize.
Yes.
Both me and the Attorney General of Arizona realize that he misspoke, that in fact we've done an incredible number of things, 4 pages worth of information, and pointed out to him that he, before he looked at Utah and Arizona, he needed to realize that Warren Jeffs performed those child bride marriages in Nevada and was arrested in Nevada and so on and so forth. So I think we've moved beyond that in a positive way.
Though Harry Reid wasn't born yesterday, and you can hear the kind of pent-up frustration that he was expressing there. Everyone could.
Absolutely, he could. And what the positive thing that's come from that and now his apology is that we are moving forward with some meetings with the federal government out of the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Attorney General's Office. And we've already had a phone conference, and we're having a major law enforcement meeting in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks. So we're going to proceed down that road with some federal help, which I think is very important.
You've said that you fear that the big move taken by Texas may frighten members of polygamous groups, potentially in your state, from raising their hands when they're in trouble.
Well, that's exactly right. The bottom line is we understood that if they, the people who are being abused, fear us, fear the state, fear government, fear law enforcement, more than they fear their abusers, they're not going to come seek help. And their abusers have preyed on that. They have taught them from the cradle to be afraid of government, that there is going to be another repeat of the 53 Short Creek raid in Utah and Arizona. They've lived by that. That's been their mantra. It's coming again. You can't trust anybody, because once it comes, they're going to come and not just deal with individual cases of alleged crime or abuse. They're going to take everybody away.
1953, 236 children taken into custody there in the Short Creek raid you described. But what else could Texas have done, Mark Schertleff? They got this very large number of children and a community that's anything but transparent.
Well, Tom, and this is why that's a mixed bag, because I totally support Texas in going in the way they did, because and I lay responsibility that fully at the feet of Warren Jeffs and Merrill Jessup and Willie Jessup and the rest of the leaders of that group, because they specifically went to Texas. Number one, to be able to continue the child bride marriages, because they had a lower marriage age there. And in addition, the fact that they created this 1,700-acre property that nobody could go in and check up on. So you couldn't go to one house where one allegation of abuse was in one home. They had to go into the entire community. And so putting the secrecy and the isolation and the prohibition of the people to come and go at will created that problem. And now creates the bigger problem is in order to get to individual cases and individual due process, those FLDS members need to step up and tell the truth and give DNA, and so they can Texas can understand what the families are, so they can proceed down this in an orderly fashion.
Marcy Hamilton, do you share the Attorney General's concern that the scale of the step taken by Texas may, in fact, frighten some other members of communities similar to this in other states or even in Texas, who may be afraid to come forward for fear of what it may mean for their community later?
Well, I think that's just odd thinking coming from an attorney general. It would have been my view, given the knowledge that we have, not just in Texas but elsewhere, of child brides, Warren Jeffs being just the tip of the iceberg, that government should be helping them. Government should be enforcing, for example, the polygamy laws that are on the books, which give them entree to figure out what else is going on. The reason they can't trust anyone in government is because they are violating so many laws at once. That's just what those who violate the laws that apply to everybody else do. They try to hide. And so I would think that it would be more appropriate, and I'm very gratified to hear that the FBI is going to get involved with this. It took a very long time and a lot of public pressure for the FBI to go after Warren Jeffs. It will be a very good thing if they now become involved and be much more proactive in trying to rescue children in Texas and elsewhere.
Attorney General Shurtleff, I want to hear you on that. But first, Wade Goodwin, have you seen, Wade, in your long reporting in this region, kind of political or legal tolerance of these communities because they have been part of the fabric of the culture here, and going after them comes with some political price?
Well, it doesn't in Texas. I think, you know, that's been part of the reason you see the kind of action that mm-hmm. Texas has taken is that I think they feel impunity, political impunity. I don't think they feel like the governor is going to be voted out or Child Protective Services is going to be dismantled for being overly aggressive with this group. It's a different political climate in Texas than you might have in other states.
Mark Shurtleff, do you in Utah feel the cultural, the political freedom to vigorously pursue the law when it comes to these groups?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, I just got to respond to Professor Hamilton. You know, people like her that Harry Reid listens to, who don't have the education information that we have had over 8 years now of dealing with this on a case-by-case, very in-depth basis. So don't criticize us and say we're not doing the right way. We know, and to paint every single polygamist with the same broad brush. The problem is, you've seen the problem with Texas, $5.2 million already, can't handle 500 kids in their system. There are thousands of children, 10,000 children of polygamous families, and not 10,000 kids being abused in Utah. Even if they were, there's no way. It's a financial resource issue. You can't put every thousands of adult consensual bigamists in prison, and you can't put 10,000 kids into the foster care system. You have to go on a case-by-case basis and prove individual cases, which we've done to substantial success in Utah. We specifically went after these things. We said we don't have the resources to put you all in prison, but we are going to prohibit the type of child bride marriages, child abuse, domestic violence, incest, child rape, all the things that we need to prosecute. We need to do it with willing witnesses, and people are going to come out and trust us. And that's what we've done in Utah, to the point that they actually left Utah to go to Texas, where they felt like they could be free to do it.
Is there a margin of tolerance in Utah law for bigamy, no. for polygamy?
No, there is not. It's not a tolerance for bigamy. It's a felony here, as unlike in other states. The problem, again, is how do you? Texas is realizing that they probably bit off more than they can chew with 500 kids in a state the size of Texas. It is just an impossibility. So what do you do with your resources? It's a law enforcement decision we take all the time. I mean, adultery is against the law. Fornication is against the law. No one's calling on authorities to go out and prosecute all those cases. We need to use our resources for the more serious crimes, the more heinous crimes, and those involve women and children, and those are the ones we've gone after.
Professor Hamilton, Attorney General Shurtleff says, look more closely. We're dealing with this in a nuanced way, in the most effective way we can.
That's simply not accurate. And the notion that the argument would be financial resources against the welfare of the children, whether or not children are being abused in every polygamous home, is not the issue. The issue is in groups where we know that the problem exists, why is there not more aggressive law enforcement? Case-by-case enforcement has not been effective. It has stopped individual men in a handful of cases, but it has not stopped the cultural degradation and use of children for sex. So this is the first time I've heard the defense of financial resources. I find it shocking.
Well,
I would have thought children would have been more important.
Mr. Shurtleff.
Let me respond to that. I can't believe a law professor is suggesting that because you have some individualized cases in a community of child abuse, that you can then classify the entire community, and you don't have to go in our court system today and prove individual abuse or neglect or imminent harm, so that you have a six-month-old baby who you have no evidence whatsoever that that particular child is in danger, and yet because someday she might have a 10-15% chance of being a child bride down the road 13 years from now, that gives the state the responsibility and the right to terminate parental rights? I mean, I can't believe a law professor is suggesting that.
Well, that's not what I suggested at all. What I suggested,
absolutely, because you don't know
what I suggested
are in these communities.
No, what I suggested is more aggressive oversight in order to find the children that are abused.
So you're suggesting
even if you don't follow the Texas model, there's a lot more to do.
We don't have compounds in Utah. So you are suggesting a wide-scale roundup of tens of thousands of children.
No, I'm not. I'm suggesting that the reports that you get, you follow up on.
We do that. We have the guy who's mostly responsible for this in prison probably for the rest of his life. They left Utah because of our aggressive prosecution, so don't wag your finger at what
No. Warren Jeffs, let's be accurate. Warren Jeffs was not solely responsible for this. He was the person who was transporting the girls, and so if you've got him in prison, that does not mean that the system has stopped in which the girls are being shared between compounds. That's just not factually accurate.
I didn't say it stopped, but we've got the guy primarily responsible for this increased number of child bride marriages. They specifically left Utah because we were coming after him here. I support wholly Texas going after it there. I've been to their legislature. I testified to their down there to increase their laws. I've spoken to people down there and said you got to know there are some of these going on. It's not every single child, but it is going on, and you have to get in there and do something about it. We've done that here. What I'm saying is, if they fear the state, and now they do. And it's not just Texas, but the rest of it, more than they do their abusers, they're not going to come out and seek help.
We've got a lot of listeners who want in here. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina, and Harold. Hi, Harold. You're on the air.
That's all right. How are you doing?
We're all right. What do you know, Harold?
This whole issue with the police going into the compound was brought on by, they said alleged phone calls. They apparently never found the person that made the phone calls. Correct?
Yes, Harold, we've got a rough line, but I think I got the nut of that. And let me put it to Wade Goodwin. Wade, there was a call that said, I'm a 16-year-old girl. I'm in the compound. I've been abused. But I'm reading here now characterizations of that call as a hoax or potentially a hoax. What do you know about that, Wade?
Well, I don't think nothing has been confirmed about whether this is a hoax or not a hoax. There's speculation that this was a hoax, but it doesn't matter. I mean, the fact is if there's reports of child abuse and the state goes in to investigate and discovers a methamphetamine lab, the state has every right to prosecute for that methamphetamine lab, even if those initial allegations of child abuse turned out to be false. So whatever the truth of the original calls to the state are, the fact is Texas is saying it doesn't matter because what we found when we actually went investigate trumps that phone call.
Let's take a call from Fort Eustis, Virginia, and Randy. Hi, Randy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah.
As a general public, it's hard to get into too much of this because there's so much we don't know. We're not privy to a lot of the court cases and a lot of the inside workings of what went on. But as a general public, as a citizen, I still look at this as a cult. Now, whether cult good, cults are bad, it's a cult. They're living differently on their own. And in history, cults generally do not turn out right. And, you go back to Jim Jones and Waco.
But Americans are entitled to belong to cults if they want to, as long as no one's hurt. Is it the religious cult or the abuse of children that gets your attention, Randy?
I agree. Well, both. Because of the cult, as soon as a child, whether it be sexual, whether it be physical, whether it be child labor, as soon as a child was involved, whether it be one child, 10 children, 50 children, it has to be investigated, and the children must come first.
So it sounds like you're coming down on this on the side of what Texas has done there. Randy, our time is short. Marcy Hamilton, how do you expect that this is going to work out in the end? So many children, they can be in custody for a year. Do you picture the Yearning for Zion Ranch back up and running after, a very tough year, a very tough legal experience? Or do you think this should end this community?
Well, it's hard to predict the future, but what's been going on in the hearings down in Texas is courts are trying to determine whether or not they can work out agreements, family service agreements, with parents in which parents set up a residence and make it clear that abuse is going to be unlikely, and they're going to let some of the children eventually live with the parents who have satisfied the requirements of the family service agreement, standard operating procedure in these cases. And so to the extent that the adults leave the compound and set up a home in which they pledge to make sure the child is not abused and the child is not in fact abused, we're going to see some kind of reunion. But we still have the larger question of prosecution for criminal behavior, and all of the adults are potentially chargeable with conspiracy to abuse because they've all participated in making it possible. That's the next big question. Get outside the family courts. What's going to happen in the criminal arena?
Attorney General Shurtleff, we've just got you for another minute here. What do you see as the long-term implications of this for FLDS and polygamists around the American South, Southwest, around the entire region? Do you see this as a watershed moment or something else?
Well, it is a watershed moment, and I agree with Professor Hamilton that the proof's in the pudding. You still have to wait and see, particularly with regard to criminal charges. That's what we're most concerned about. The problem is, people most responsible, Merrill Jessup and some of the other leaders there, they're gone. And maybe we can get to the point of having the FBI involved again like we did in Warren Jeffs and be able to capture them and hold them ultimately responsible. But those are the people we primarily want to be held responsible. They can't go back to the compound mentality. As far as cults thrive in isolation, and when there's a leader who wants to abuse his followers and commit crimes by isolating them and by allowing, feeding that isolation, it allows that stuff to happen. And so the more we do to continue to keep this stuff public and to work with them and to allow them us to come in when we need to and investigate individual cases, then we'll be successful.
I wish Texas all the best. What a story. Utah Attorney General Mark Shurtleff, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Marcy Hamilton at Cardozo School of Law, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Wade Goodwin with NPR in Dallas, thank you so much, Wade. Thanks for being here.
It was my pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.